200 yards inland from where she now stood, on the third day of the assault, John Bradley saw an American boy fall in the distance. He raced through the mortar and machine gun fire to the wounded Marine, administered plasma from a bottle strapped to a rifle he'd planted in the sand, and then dragged the boy to safety as bullets pinged off the rocks. For his heroism, he was awarded the Navy Cross, second only to the Medal of Honor. John Bradley never confided the details of his valor to Betty. Our family did not learn of his Navy Cross until after he had died. Now Steve took my mother's arm and steadied her as she walked up the thick sand terraces. Mark stood at the water's edge, lost in thought, facing out to sea. Joe and I saw a blockhouse overlooking the beach and made our way to it. The Japanese had installed more than 750 blockhouses and pillboxes around the island, little igloos of rounded concrete, reinforced with steel rods to make them virtually impervious even to artillery rounds. Many of their smashed white carcasses still stood, like skeletons of animals half a century dead, at intervals along the strand. The blockhouses were hideous remnants of the island defenders' dedication in a cause they knew was lost. The soldiers assigned to them had the mission of killing as many invaders as possible before their own inevitable deaths. Joe and I entered the squat cement structure. We could see that the machine gun muzzle still protruding through its firing slit was bent, probably from overheating as it killed American boys. We squeezed our way inside. There were two small rooms, dark except for the brilliant light shining through the hole, one room for shooting, the other for supplies and concealment against the onslaught. Hunched with my brother in the confining darkness, I tried to imagine the invasion from the viewpoint of a defending blockhouse occupant. He created terror with his unimpeded field of fire, but he must have been terrified himself. A trapped killer, he knew that he would die there. Probably from the searing heat of a flamethrower thrust through the firing hole by a desperate young Marine who had managed to survive the machine gun spray. What must it have been like to crouch in that blockhouse and watch the American Armada materialize offshore? How many days, how many hours did he have to live? Would he attain his assigned kill ratio of 10 enemies before he was slaughtered? What must it have been like for an American boy to advance toward him? I thought of my own interactions with the Japanese when I was in my early 20s. I attended college in Tokyo, and my choices were study or sushi. But for too many on Bloody Iwu, there were no choices. It had been kill or be killed. But now it was time to ascend the mountain. Standing where they raised the flag at the edge of the extinct volcanic crater, the wind whipping our hair, we could view the entire 2-mile beach where the Armada had discharged its boatloads of attacking Marines. In February 1945, the Japanese could see it with equal clarity from the tunnels just beneath us. They waited patiently until the beach was chock-a-block with American boys. They had spent many months pre-positioning their gun sights. When the time came, they simply opened fire, beginning one of the great military slaughters of all history. An oddly out-of-place feeling now seized me. I was so glad to be up here. The vista below us, despite the gory freight of its history, was invigorating. The sun and the wind seemed to bring all of us alive. And then I realized that my high spirits were not so out of place at all. I was reliving something. I recalled the line from the letter my father wrote 3 days after the flag raising. It was the happiest moment of my life. Yes, it had to be exhilarating to raise that flag. From Suribachi, you feel on top of the world, surrounded by ocean. But how had my father's attitude shifted from that to, if only there hadn't been a flag attached to that pole? As some 20 young Marines and older officers milled around us, we Bradleys began to take pictures of one another. We posed in various spots, including near the X that marks the spot of the actual raising. We had brought with us a plaque, shiny red in the mitten shape of Wisconsin, and made of Wisconsin ruby red granite, the state stone. Part of our mission here was to embed this plaque in the rough, rocky soil. Now my brother Mark scratched in that soil with a jackknife. He swept the last pebbles from the newly bared area and said, "Okay, it should fit now." Joe gently placed the plaque in the dry soil. It read, "To John H. Bradley, Flag Raiser, February 23, 1945, from his family."